Now, fourthly and lastly, breaking through the time sense. Well, what is the time sense? Or what is time? One could say, time is security. That is, time is insecurity. But perhaps this is too cryptic. There are two kinds of time, one may say. Some people say three or four, but let's say two today. Two kinds of time. There's organic time, and there's mechanical time. Or we may say there's organic time, and there's clock time. By organic time, we mean our own total experience of pure, continuous duration, with no thought of before, no thought of after, just a direct, immediate, present. The experience of pure, total duration, continuous. Here there's no splitting up of the time flow into past, present, and future. But mechanical or clock time is the experience of travelling as though along a straight line. So this is also sometimes called linear time. And it's divided into past, present, future. It's chopped up into hours, minutes, seconds. Organic time, we may say, expands and contracts according to the intensity of one's experience. If one's experience is more intense, then organic time expands. If it's less intense, one's organic time contracts. But clock time is perfectly uniform. It's the same all the time. The same even dead level. So clock time does not correspond to organic time, and clock time cannot measure organic time or one's experience within, as it were, organic time. Now, when one speaks of breaking through the time sense or breaking through time, one means mechanical time or clock time. And it's from this that one must emancipate oneself. Most of us, sad to say, are slaves of clock time, especially those who live in cities, because we have to live according to the clock. We have to live by the clock. Let me give an example. We say, for instance, it's time to eat. Now, we may not feel hungry. We may not feel hungry at all, but it's 12 o'clock or it's 1 o'clock, it's time to eat. So we have to eat all the same because it's time to eat. And in the same way, we work when it is time to work. We sleep when it is time to sleep. Bedtime, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, as the case may be. We even meditate when it is time to meditate, and often, only too often, for no other reason. Our lives are geared to the clock. And in this way, the natural self-regulating rhythm of the organism is destroyed, and one's experience of organic time, of pure duration, lost. Our life experiences don't, as it were, unfold or flower from the depths of the eternal now, but we see them sort of strung out, just like washing on a line. And we mentally, therefore, anticipate our experiences. We mentally sort of pre-arrange them. We draw up programs and diaries and so on. And this because, essentially, basically, we don't trust ourselves to the experience of organic time, of pure, continuous duration. We don't trust ourselves to this because we feel insecure. And this is why I said at the beginning that time, clock time that is security and therefore insecurity. We like to think within this context of clock time, well, tomorrow's Monday. Tomorrow I'll be doing so and so. Tuesday at such and such o'clock, I'll be doing so and so. Next week I'll be doing that. Next year I'll be doing so and so. So some people plan and organize their whole lives in this way, right up to the day of retirement. And after that, of course, there's just a blank. a sort of dreary, miserable space before death. And this is really a frightening thought. In other words, it's not altogether our own fault, not our own fault individually, because pressure is brought on us all the time to live in this way, to regulate our lives by the clock, to gear our existence to the clock. And this means, of course, really not living at all. So we have to break through the time sense, break through mechanical time. We have, as it were, to smash the clock, or at least to allow it to run down. Well, so much for what we must break through. We must break through negative emotions, break through psychological conditionings, break through rational thinking, and break through the time sense. And in this way, from all these four directions, as it were, simultaneously, from all these four angles simultaneously, we break through into, we converge upon Buddhahood. Now, Buddhahood has various aspects, and these various aspects of Buddhahood correspond to different aspects of the conditioned, the mundane, the samsara. If we break through the conditioned at a certain point, we shall break through into the corresponding aspect of Buddhahood. If, for instance, we break through the sufferings of conditioned existence, we shall break through into the bliss, the happiness, the everlasting joy of Buddhahood. And similarly, with regard to the four aspects of the conditioned with which we've been dealing, breaking through negative emotions means breaking through into the positive emotions of love and compassion, which are aspects of Buddhahood. Breaking through psychological conditionings means breaking through into a state of complete freedom and spontaneity and unconditioned creativity. Breaking through the rational mind means breaking through into a state of what we may describe as transcendental non-rationality. And breaking through the time sense means breaking through into the experience of the eternal, the everlasting now. So all of these are characteristics of Buddhahood: love and compassion, freedom and spontaneity, transcendental non-rationality, and living in the eternal now. So they will be, they are, characteristics also of the enlightened person. The enlightened person will manifest, will radiate positive emotions, will be completely unconditioned and spontaneous in behavior, will therefore be unpredictable, may be liable to do anything at any moment, will not be attached to rational thinking, not bound by rational thinking, and will be quite devoid of any sense of mechanical time, will be living from moment to moment and enjoying, as it were, the bliss of pure duration. So we see from all this that the enlightened person cuts a rather unconventional figure. You may be interested to hear that some of the Hindu texts raise the question, right at the end of a long discourse on the spiritual life and nirvana and so on, well, how will the liberated person, the enlightened person, appear to others? What will he look like to others? Well, within himself he'll be enlightened, he'll know reality, he'll know God or know Brahma. But what will he be like? What will he appear like to others? And they give a very interesting reply. They give a threefold reply, some of these texts. They say that to others, the enlightened person will appear, one, like a child, two, like a madman, and three, like a ghost. Like a child, because the child is spontaneous and uninhibited. Like a madman, because, well, the enlightened person, in a sense, is just mad. And as for the ghost, of course, just comes and goes. You don't know where he comes from, you don't know where he goes to. the enlightened person is just like that. You can't keep track. Huh? You can't tie him down. You can't corner him. It slips through your fingers like that. And there's also something a little uncanny about him. So, the enlightened person, one may say, one who has broken through into Buddhahood, certainly will not appear to other people like a respectable and law-abiding citizen.